This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Artists Jan Berger and Donovan Zimmerman met while working together at the Haw River Festival in Saxpahaw. Jan decided to create a puppet show for the fourth graders who attended the educational program, so he asked Donovan to help him finish the show. And with that, a long-lasting artistic collaboration was born. 20 years later, Jan and Donovan are proud co-directors of the Paper Hand Puppet Intervention, a project that stages a new play each year featuring giant puppets made from cardboard, bamboo, and a whole range of assorted items. Paper Hand Puppet Intervention stages their shows throughout the month of August at the Forest Theater in Chapel Hill, and the directors and founders are here. Jan, Donovan, welcome back, and congratulations. 20 years. Wow.
Hi, Frank.
Thanks so much, Frank.
It's great to have you. Jan, tell us about how this whole thing got started.
Well, you know, Donovan and I were both, we knew each other from the Haw River Festival, which is now called the Haw River Learning Celebration, where we try to teach kids about the Haw River and how important it is, take them on field trips and go down to the river. So we knew each other from that, but we were living in different parts of the country and we'd come back to do the festival. And one year I decided to make a puppet show to be part of it. And like you said, asked Donovan to be a part of it. And he's like, all right, I'll come down early and help you finish the show. And that was our first show that we made together. And, you know, just being a young artist, but really not knowing what to do in the world, we were both carpenters and eventually just started doing more and more puppet shows together. We did a giant pageant for our friend's wedding. And it was, you know, you're at that time of your life where you're able to choose what you want to do, what you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. You don't have a lot of responsibilities. We were able to make a go of it, and I feel super lucky about that.
When we hear puppets, we think of maybe something kind of tiny that fits on your hand, but you have these giant, majestic, incredibly inventive things. How did you go from, or did you start with it? Was that, Donovan, let me ask you, was that first puppet show that you did, you put together that kind of majestic puppet, or was it a little smaller scale?
I think in general it was a little smaller. We did make a giant river for that first show that was a big face, probably about 6 feet from chin to top of the head, and then about maybe 20 or 30 feet long with ribbons and things that people would carry underneath to make it look like a river with a face on the front. And for me, I was making masks, and I was living up in New England when Jan and I talked, and so I was on the path of being inspired to be a mask maker. And then when we got down here together and started thinking about collaborating, of course, we had both been exposed to giant puppetry through Bread and Puppet Theater in Vermont. And Jan grew up going there, and I had gotten exposed to it when I was about 19. And you know, once I saw all of that, I started making masks, but then at a certain point, I decided, well, what would it be like to make a bigger mask? And so we made this this puppet called Asante. Remember that? Yeah. And that was one of the first big ones that, like a three person, where one person's out on the hands, and then one on the head. And we were inspired, we noticed the big sort of awe and wonder from the reactions to those big things that were sort of sweeping and grand, and I wanted to elicit that reaction more and see where I could go with that. It just kept seeming like an interesting way to explore, to see how we could get people to sort of to have this wow kind of opening experience when they see a giant thing like that.
Well, you talked about the fact that both of you had at one point or another experienced Bread and Puppet Theater in Vermont. Jan, you were much younger, right, when you first... Yeah. What was that experience like for you? And was there a moment, you know, when you saw that and say, this is my life? Or did you revisit those memories later?
I have sort of a little bit of a revisiting. You know, when I was a kid, my parents would take us up to see these shows in Vermont. And we would camp out in the neighboring farm fields where they would open it up for people to do that. And then we would go see these shows in a natural amphitheater. I think it was an old quarry out in the fields there and forests. And they do what the director Peter Schumann calls maximalism, where they do as much as possible, combining sculpture and music and dance and clowning and painting and all these art forms together. And as a kid, it was a fantastic experience. And as I grew a bit older and I would go to see the shows without my parents in my early 20s, it was where I was getting my news in a way, you know, learning about things, because they have a very radical perspective that I wouldn't hear otherwise from the newspapers and stuff like that. And I really was drawn to it. There's a book about Bread and Puppet that's called Rehearsing with Gods. And it feels that way in a similar way of like going to the Zuni Pueblo and seeing the Kachina dances, where you feel like this is an embodiment of something that's here on Earth. And in that way, it transcends typical theater where you're kind of knowing you're going to go see a show and it's all very set up for you and you sit in your seat. It's more like being in presence of a greater idea than just the person itself who's manipulating the puppet.
Well, talk more about that, Donovan, because you mentioned the fact that you were making masks at this point. What was your intention there? How did you see mask making in terms of its artistic development for you?
So I was traveling and keeping sketchbooks as my primary art form for a number of years after getting out of high school. And I went to a school for creative and performing arts where I had a major in art and a minor in drama, but I was also exposed to dance. And it was one of the fame school kind of thing where people literally danced down the hallways with jazz hands. And, you know, it was like that. And I was exposed to all those art forms and it became kind of a conditioning, you could say, towards the creative fields. And I didn't know that puppetry existed literally until in the way that I embrace it now, until I was 19 when I showed up at the Bread and Puppet Farm after some travels. And I realized that you could combine art and music and dance and theater and writing and storytelling and all of these art forms in one umbrella, under one umbrella. And that was so exciting to me and such a sort of miraculous epiphany, you could say, for me. I'm not saying it was miraculous for anyone else, but I just embraced it from that moment and started making the masks then. And then it was a couple years later that I met Jan and I had a little collection that I had been making. And then it just continued to, once I got down here, it just continued to grow and we tried to go deeper. And once we started getting people's attention a bit with some of the grand scale and some of the intricacies of the masks and the emotions and people's surprised sort of response to the idea that they would have an emotional response. There's always that element of surprise to people who come new to it. People get really moved and they feel things that because puppetry reflects our humanity back to us in a very authentic way sometimes. And that surprise, though, can lead people to tears and laughter and all sorts of things. And one of our main missions, I would say, is to get people to get reconnected with that feeling self, that emotional body that allows us to feel connected with the earth itself and its creatures, and but also with our own stories and with our own hearts and with each other.
Well, and also there is a part of this mission, is it not, Jan, social change. So once we're connected to ourselves and reconnected to our authentic selves and the world around us, then it's pretty obvious that something needs to change, I would think.
Yeah. Our show this year is called We Are Here, and we're choosing that as our theme partly because we are wanting to highlight the idea of being really connected and present in the place that we're at. And we're feeling like one of the biggest problems that we all face is our disconnection and our ability to distance ourselves from what we really care about in the world around us. So many times we can say, well, I'm not responsible for that. So it's a way of making a declaration or taking a stand, saying we are here. And one of the themes for the show, besides that, is we're talking about trees a lot, because trees sort of embody that sense of place of being rooted and there. And also all over our area, trees are being cut down and
turned into green energy.
Yeah.
That's a quizzical looking.
Yeah, the Enviva plant or the Enviva company is the biggest maker of wood pellets in our area. Yeah. And so they're cutting the forest down faster than they're cutting the forest down in the rainforest down in Brazil. And that's happening right here in the Southeast and happening in North Carolina. And so it's an issue where, you know, people are talking about, oh, we need to save the rainforest, but what about the forest right, right. here in our area?
Well, take us through the creative process now and the production process. How does it go from an idea to a production and then the stage at the Forest Theater?
Well, Jan and I start meeting and drinking coffee in little cafes, and basically we sketch and talk about what we're interested in speaking about or what's on our hearts and what we feel is important. Now that we have an audience that is listening, it feels we both feel very responsible to show up to that in a very to take care of that and not just squander it or just say something flippant. You know, we wanted to strike a universal chord with all the folks who are coming as much as we can. And so after we do all those drawings for months and sort of long chats that we have and that wander from over every subject you could imagine. Mm-hmm. But like this year, we found ourselves talking about the intricacies of a tree life and how a tree breathes, how a tree communicates through the mycelial network. And something about that was really sparking a lot of conversations just about how ecosystems work and how diversity is a strong pulsing element of how and how a tree, you know, is just this major tool against fighting climate change. It's just, it's a carbon sink, and it does all of these things. And so we're not wanting to just overlook that and take trees for granted. I mean, so one of the things that we can do with puppetry is to personify and to help us all feel more empathy, to exercise our empathy muscle, that we can think and feel for a minute into, like, what is a tree or a group of raccoons or squirrels or bees living in a forest. What does that feel like? And we can create those feelings through the music and how we put the images together. And again, changing the scale from smaller to larger so that people kind of have to go on a little bit of a journey with us. But the process, though, started, hit its next phase just yesterday, where we met our interns and our crew for the year.
You have a lot of community involvement, right? A lot of folks, volunteers, yeah. who help you out.
So this year we have 7 interns, plus we have a studio crew of 4 people who mm-hmm. are past interns or people who just work for us, who are artists that we hire. And we just, we get in there and we share our ideas and we start building. And Jan and I just try to keep the vision together and guide, but we allow people to have a lot of agency. That's the hope anyway, with building into the show. And then the rehearsals start in about a month once we have some things built. And then, so that next infusion of energy happens. And right now the musicians are writing and putting things on Dropbox for us to listen to. And so all the different pieces start coming together, and I think I told someone the other day that we're just more acclimated now to the chaotic conditions that we have created for ourselves. So we're just have gotten used to our little wild ride that we're on here.
Well, what about the other conditions that we're also acclimating to? And I wonder if they work against this very notion. Jan, you were talking about, you know, the pageantry of this and the fact that we are this sort of embodiment, this incarnation of the divine. And we've for millennia tried to figure out how to do that, right? And for millennia, the pageant has been a way, you know, something bigger than life, covered in oil, shining, glistening, and lots of noise. And that has allowed us to sort of escape into the other and then back into ourselves. And it's been quite effective. I wonder, in this time of tiny screens where everything has been shrunk to hand size, to fit in your hand, whether this kind of thing can still have an effect. It certainly is effective today for your audiences, but over time, if we've just lost the capacity or losing the capacity to embody and embrace this wonder.
I don't know. I worry about that sometimes, but I also think that people are starving for something that's real and authentic, and people saying how they really feel and taking a stand on things. I also love those moments in a puppet show where we create stuff that's not wholly an illusion, where you can see how it's done. Like you'll have like a piece of cardboard that's a fire, or a cloud that's raining cardboard raindrops, or that kind of thing. So as an audience member, you're watching this and you're going, ha ha, I know how that's done. But then the other part of your brain is just going, oh yeah, I believe it. Yeah. And those two things are occupying the same space together, and it creates a sense of like new neurons being created and delight, where you're saying, oh, okay, this is something new. This is something different.
I notice a lot.
I love to occupy that space.
Great. I notice a lot. People are very willing to just drop into that magical space that is just below the surface, where they want to release all of the busyness and the email load and all of the stuff, and just they want to they'll reach their hand up as a full grown adult or whatever, you know, and when a puppet is coming dipping down, and they're in a moment of pure nowness where they're just, they're not thinking about any of those things. They're in the present, and they're experiencing a little bit of that magic, believing in and you know, in that. And that to us is, you know, a bit of the intervention part, you know, that we're that sort of little magic coming in is, it's sort of like, it's surprising but delightful, and it allows you to
well, you'll never be the same when you re-enter. The point is that now when you pick up that phone, you're not the same person as you were.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea would to be inspired to live into that more deeply, into that creativity, into that that magical feeling.
Donovan Zimmerman and Jan Berger are the directors and founders of Paper Hand Puppet Intervention. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thanks, Frank.
Paper Hand Puppet Intervention productions begin every weekend starting August 2nd through September 30th, Forest Theater, Chapel Hill. We've got all the information at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley's our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.